here for argument or afternoon. We're here for argument today. Mr. Dolan, are you going to proceed?
I am.
Please proceed.
Thank you, Judge Moore. Good afternoon, Your Honors. Gregory Dolan, Senior Litigation Counsel of the New Civil Liberties Alliance. With the Honorable Pauline Newman, with me, our Senior Litigation Counsel, John Vicchioni, and to his left, Mark Chenoweth, President and General Counsel of the NCLA. Before I begin on the merits, with committee's permission, I would like to read our objections in for the record.
Before you begin with that, let me, as a housekeeping matter, I just want to remind counsel at the outset that our rules prohibit the audio or video recording of this argument, and I want to ensure that you're not recording it in any way.
Judge Moore, we read your order, and certainly we have no intention of violating it.
And then finally, I just want to remind counsel that all aspects of this hearing are confidential until we agree otherwise. Okay?
Yes, and I would like to come back to that point, but yes, well, I do understand that.
Please proceed.
So first, just objections for the record. First, we object to this proceeding before this committee and the Judicial Council of the Circuit due to the inherent risk of an actual bias, which we have documented in our submissions. We particularly object to the special committee's membership, given that all three of the members of this committee attempted to convince Judge Newman to retire in exchange for not launching this investigation. We simply do not understand, given the constitutional and statutory requirements, why the Chief Judge and or the Judicial Council have refused to request a transfer of this matter. Second, we object to this committee's orders excluding parts of Judge Newman's legal team and her chamber staff from attending this hearing. Third, we object to the committee's refusal to either provide us with a recording of this proceeding or permit us to create one. Fourth, and perhaps most importantly, we object to Judge Newman's continued and illegal suspension from the duties of the office to which she was nominated and confirmed. And our appearance here today should not be viewed as a waiver of any of the above objections. Finally, and this, I guess, goes to your last point, Judge Moore, we reiterate our request that all of our materials submitted to this committee, including our letters of July 5th and 12th, the committee's order of July 7th, 11th, and 12th, and the transcript of this hearing be released with appropriate redactions pursuant to Rule 23b-7. With these objections noted for the record, I'm ready to address the substance of today's hearing. On the merits, we take issue with committee's characterization of Judge Newman's behavior as failing to cooperate. Quite the contrary, Judge Newman did not fail to cooperate with this investigation. As we've stated in our letter of April 21st, that Judge Newman is willing to cooperate with an investigation that is conducted consistent with the limits that the Constitution, the Judicial Disability Act of 1980, and the rules of the judicial conduct and judicial proceedings impose on such investigations. In our May 9th letter, pages 4 to 5, we've indicated that Judge Newman is willing to cooperate, i.e., work together, as the word cooperate is defined in the dictionary. In our letter on May 25th at 3, we once again said that Judge Newman is committed to providing records and undergoing appropriate medical examination if this matter is transferred.
But, I'm sorry.
Of course.
But on that matter of cooperation, even the citation you had in your brief, that was predicated on our transferring the case, and, as I understood it, and on our restoring her to sitting. That's the quote that was in your brief.
That is correct, because as of our letter on May 25th, Judge Newman was suspended, according to Judge Moore's own email, quote, pending conclusion of this investigation. Respectfully, there's no authority for such suspension. We, of course, question authority to suspend even at the conclusion of the investigation, because we submit that the Constitution does not permit suspensions. But that aside, there's absolutely no authority to suspend a sitting judge pending the investigation.
No, I appreciate that. And I just wanted to clarify your statements about her willingness to cooperate.
Correct.
And the predicate.
And so, correct. So she was willing to cooperate, predicated on appropriate due process proceedings, and this council and this committee behaving in an appropriate and legal manner as well. So, yes, that was predicated on those matters. And in contrast, this committee has refused to work cooperatively. Because as we pointed out in our letters, cooperation is a two-way street. It means working together. This committee, on matters big and small, refused to cooperate and work together with Judge Newman, as I've now said a number of times, refused to transfer, even though every circuit faced with a similar situation has transferred any investigation of its circuit judge to another circuit. And in refusing to do so, attempted to support this refusal with misleading data. Just to point out that how every other circuit dealt with this issue. Even when a judge was no longer a member of a circuit court, as was the case with then-Judge Kavanaugh, when complaints were filed against him citing his alleged misbehavior during Senate confirmation hearing with his current seat. By the time complaints were filed, he was already confirmed to the Supreme Court. The complaints went to the D.C. Circuit Judicial Council. And even though Judge Kavanaugh, or that, by now Justice Kavanaugh, was no longer a member of that council, the matter was transferred. Justice Roberts was requested to transfer the matter, and it was transferred to the 10th Circuit. We were able to find not a single instance when a complaint against a circuit judge that was not dismissed outright was handled in his home circuit. Whether it's a complaint against Judge Kavanaugh, Judge Marion Tromberry, Judge, blanking on his name, but former judge of the 6th Circuit, Judge Jones of the 5th Circuit, every single one was transferred. This is the only time that it was not. The Federal Circuit Judicial Council stands alone. And again, I fail to understand the logic behind it, and it does show that this committee and council has refused to cooperate with Judge Newman. Of course, it refused to reinstate Judge Newman, and as I pointed out, Judge Prost, there's absolutely no basis, at least there was no cited basis up until the order of Judicial Council of June 5th.
Can I just ask you, the word cooperation, you're using with reference to the committee based on what source?
Based on the definition of that word in the dictionary. It means working together, Your Honor.
This is about Judge Newman's refusal to cooperate with compliance with the orders of the committee, right?
The hearing is certainly meant to address that issue. What I'm submitting to this committee is that in order to cooperate, in order to work together, there must be both parties must actually work together. At no point was the committee willing to entertain any of Judge Newman's requests, whether it's her restoration, or in fact even given an explanation up until June 5th after we filed our suit as to why she remains suspended.
So we're here on a, as you know, a very specific three-part issue, whether there was a failure to cooperate with respect to the directive of medical records. That's first. Second, with respect to the directive regarding the neurological and neuropsychological examinations. And third, the request for an interview. Can I just start briefly with the last point? Twice, I think on April 17th and May 16th, the special committee specifically invited Judge Newman to sit down for an interview to discuss any alleged factual errors or more generally in the April 17th one. What was the good cause for Judge Newman's refusal to take up that express invitation for an opportunity to discuss the claims with us?
Judge Toronto, I think I would respectfully disagree with the characterization. I don't think it was an invitation to discuss, as you said, factual errors or other general matters. In fact, the invitation...
I think the April 17th order was perfectly general as to sit down for an interview. The May 17th focused on some things that I think you all had said in response to an earlier order and said there's been assertions that we have made factual errors and we would like an opportunity to have an interview to hear about those factual errors. And yet Judge Newman has said no.
All right. So, Judge Toronto, to finish my previous answer and then kind of to expand on it, I still respectfully disagree with the characterization in the following sense. I think that the order did not specify exactly what the committee wishes to interview Judge Newman about. There was just an, You said it's open-ended, but it didn't specify.
Anything she wanted.
Respectfully, that's not what it said.
The April 17th said, sit down for an interview.
But an interview implies that the committee is asking questions, and so it's not a conversation. So so we would want to, you know, but more fundamentally, like I said, we object to this committee proceeding because this committee cannot, by definition, cannot be a neutral decision maker, cannot be the neutral recommender.
So it's not in your view that there was no opportunity to have an interview with this committee, but that she's not interested in having an interview with this
committee? I don't think I've suggested there was no opportunity for an interview. I've suggested that the committee, in requesting an interview, did not specify why it wants one. In fact, its request for an interview was contrary to the prior assertion that this committee and the Judicial Council is apparently aware of the personalities and aware of what is going on, which is why supposedly it's refusing to transfer the matter elsewhere. But furthermore...
Where did you get that?
That was part of the order the first order that denied transfer. That was the order, I believe, of May 3rd. That denied transfer said, one of the reasons we're refusing to transfer is because we, the federal circuit judges, are familiar with personalities and with the issues in a way that other circuits would not be familiar with.
You're referring, I assume, to some elaboration from the Breyer Committee report about why the Breyer Committee implemented the statute to make transfer an exception, right?
No, Your Honor. No, Your Honor, I'm referring to the order of May 3rd, which I'll pull up. On page. It's a long order, just to find it. Data.
I think you want page 10.
Right, so request for a transfer. So it starts at page 9, and it suggests that, in this case, relative ignorance of the judges of another circuit of local circumstances and personalities that might make them less able to gauge what the correction active would be effective and appropriate. Judges would, in another circuit, be in poor position to persuade the judge whom they do not know well to take the action they believe is necessary. Of course, that is always true in every complaint about circuit judge, but this seems to me, or at least it's the way I read it, was a justification as to why this matter was not asked to be transferred.
Can I turn to a different topic? And this is
before you come back to that follow-up question.
Of course.
I guess, Mr. Dolan, I'm perplexed. All this says is other judges in other circuits would be less familiar with personalities. How does that equate to, therefore, you don't need to interview Judge Newman to understand the concerns about errors of fact that she claims may exist?
Well, first, Judge Moore, we've pointed out two obvious errors of fact that, you know, the claim that she had a heart attack and the claim that she had a cardiac stent placed. Frankly, we don't even understand where such allegations, with the source of these allegations, or on what basis they were made.
Okay, before we potentially discuss that, I guess I'd like to stick with what is the good cause for her refusal to interview. In the May 16th order, I will read to you the portion of the order which requests an interview. Judge Newman has suggested that the committee's prior orders contain errors of fact, but she has not identified any specific errors. I get now that you're saying she did identify one error, at least by now she has, and that's fine, I'll give you that. We have previously invited Judge Newman to meet with the committee for an interview in which she could provide the committee with information relevant to the investigation. That's very open-ended, you see, including correcting any errors of fact. We again request that Judge Newman participate in a videotaped interview with the committee, which will provide her with an opportunity to clarify these matters. How is the fact that another circuit may be less familiar with personalities good cause for her refusing to participate in an interview which would create the committee with an opportunity to gain clarity into the matters before it?
So, two-part answer. First, I think as we're now on the same page, we have clarified some of these errors with respect to the heart attack, with respect to the cardiac stent, with respect to the errors on...
Actually, you have attorney argument about them. You don't actually have evidence, right?
No, I respectfully disagree. It's not an argument. It's a statement that...
What's a statement?
It's a statement that Judge Newman... It's not an argument. It's a statement of fact. The Judge Newman did not have a heart attack.
By somebody with personal knowledge?
Yes, by somebody with personal
knowledge.
That is me. But I, based on a personal...
Well, since we're there, and I hate to interrupt the flow, but I'd like to ask you about that. If you feel it's appropriate for you to respond and to detail us the information with respect to her medical condition, including the heart attack. Correct. You've made statements that she never had a heart attack, she didn't have a heart attack, and she didn't have a stent. But in our May 16th order, we repeatedly, when we talked about getting medical records, we talked about cardiac issues. So can you represent to us if she's accepting that she didn't have a heart attack and didn't have a stent? Did she have any cardiac issues during the period in 2021 that we're discussing that required hospitalization or medical attention or otherwise?
I'm trying to, respectfully, Your Honor, I'm trying to think through my answer, not because I don't necessarily know the answer, but because of our standing objection to sharing medical information with this committee. And so I think a better approach would be that I can't provide that answer.
Okay.
because of our standing objection,
though, in terms of sharing medical information, some of the at least surface information that we have arises from Dr. Rothstein's 1.5-page report, in which in at least one paragraph, which he did, which I think most physicians and neurologists would do, they would request certain background medical information. And there's a reference that he makes in that report to... being treated with a pacemaker.
Okay.
And... a quick review of just the Mayo Clinic's report on defining that, and you're a doctor, you probably understand this better than I, is that that is a heart-related problem.
I don't think we dispute it. I think Judge Newman, I think she's been very open that she has a pacemaker. You asked me more specifically whether she had any issues in 2021. Maybe I misunderstood the question. So I think it's really not a secret Judge Newman has a pacemaker. I believe it's even in newspaper reports.
But you don't want to say whether there was a cardiac event in 2021.
Not because there was one and I'm trying to hide, but I do not want to discuss Judge Newman's medical record, especially ones that are entirely irrelevant to her mental abilities, for all the reasons we've stated in our letter, or our numerous letters.
I just want to make sure we're clear. You have asserted she didn't have a heart attack in the summer of 2021.
Correct.
You've admitted she's had a pacemaker installed, but you won't tell us whether she had a cardiac issue that resulted in her hospitalization or any surgical procedures in 2021.
We've admitted that she has pacemaker installed for, I believe, over a decade. Nothing to do with 2021. She's had a pacemaker for quite some time.
But you won't acknowledge whether she was admitted to the hospital, say, GW Hospital, on, say, June of 2022, or admitted to another hospital in May or June or July of 2021. You won't admit or deny or discuss. So you'll say she did not have a heart attack, and you can't imagine where we got that idea.
Correct.
But you won't say she wasn't in the hospital during that same time for cardiac issues.
Correct. Although, of course, I would note that the committee also did not indicate as to where its belief that Judge Newman did have a heart attack or had a cardiac stent placed, which is fairly specific procedure.
What we were talking about initially, I started this by, we're moving away from a heart attack and the technical definition of a heart attack to then whether she suffers from any cardiac issues, which could have, as the symptoms for indicate, could result in confusion, dizziness or lightheadedness, fainting or near fainting, fatigue, shortness of breath, slower pulse, chest pain, etc.
Those are conditions associated with. I'm not quite sure what, for example, dizziness or shortness of breath have to do with one's ability to carry on a work.
How about finishing the list?
Sorry?
Finish the list. Confusion, some of the other items. You think that has nothing to do with the issue of.
It might, but there's no. Again, anybody, I've spoken to Judge Newman at length. Reporters have spoken to Judge Newman at length. Former judges of this court have spoken to Judge Newman at length. No one, except several staff members, have indicated that she was at any point confused. So, yes, of course it could be.
You have pinpointed the whole heart issue. You have disputed it, and we focused on a particular time frame, as the Chief just mentioned. So, but you're unwilling to disclose to us if any issues related to the were experienced or required hospitalization or intensive medical care during that period that we had identified with respect to the heart ailment.
Correct. But also, I would point out that I understand that in one of the orders the committee said that underlying question may come into the purview as we're discussing refusal, alleged refusal to cooperate. But of course, again, this hearing is focusing on whether or not Judge Newman cooperated, and if not, to whether she had a good cause, and if she not, what is the appropriate sanction? So,
well, with respect to the cooperation aspect of the medical records, as our May 16th order indicated, what we said was the medical records we were talking about would be provided to the neurologist or the people examining her, and that seems to be kind of what happened, even in whatever limited medical exam was performed by Dr. Rothstein. Records with respect to her medication and coronary issues was provided to Dr. Rothstein, correct?
Dr. Rothstein was provided with such records as he deemed necessary.
I guess that's a little bit hard for me to understand. Was Dr. Rothstein provided with any medical records, or is his statement about her condition in his report based on her oral discussion of her medical conditions?
I will refer you to the answer I made just moments ago. Dr. Rothstein was provided with such information as he deemed necessary to conduct his examination.
And you think that that's an answer to the question what the source of the information was?
That I believe that is the answer that that I can give. For reasons stated before, Your Honor, and I do mean no disrespect, but for reasons stated before, we're not willing to discuss Judge Newman's medical records with this committee.
And remind me what those reasons are.
That this committee, this committee.
I know you can clearly.
We believe this committee is improperly constituted. We believe this matter should not stay with the Federal Circuit. We believe this committee has not made prima facie case as to why the evaluation is needed in the first place. So, for example, if you allow me to kind of sidetrack a little bit, one of the main points that the committee has made on numerous occasions was that Judge Newman has extraordinary delays.
I need to back up
sure.
to get off the statistical point before we get to it. Do I remember your response to your July 5th response objected to providing information to or agreeing to undergo examinations with the two medical professionals that our medical consultant identified, partly, maybe even entirely? Anyway, you say because there hasn't been some sort of Daubert qualification of them, is your position that the Daubert standard applies to the examiners, or other submitters of expert evidence does?
My position is that we have no idea who these people are or what, on what
basis
they were chosen.
Can you answer the question whether you're asserting that the Daubert standard applies?
Well, I think if you let me finish my answer, I think I'll get to it. But I promise I'll get to it. Just give me just a little bit of leeway. We don't know who these people are. We don't know why they were chosen, and therefore we have no idea whether they are or are not experts. And so whether it's the full Daubert that applies or any kind of smaller version of it, I think the general idea that people doing the examination and then providing supposedly expert report to the committee, we have to have some assurance that these are actually qualified people and that they're not biased and they're not, and we have no idea on what basis these individuals were chosen. So I think ultimately when these reports are submitted and they're considered by the committee, I think Daubert has application, whether it's verbatim or it's general idea, but.
So let me ask you then about that, and this is now turning back to Dr. Rothstein. The essence of Daubert is that qualifications are only the beginning, that the substance of the testimony must have a sound foundation, a reliable foundation, and that it is, for that reason, absolutely standard that when an expert testifies, he or she has to disclose the basis, the materials he or she looked at, and what the reasoning was from it. So if that's right, how is it that you think it's irrelevant what materials Dr. Rothstein was supplied?
I don't think it's relevant, but for reasons stated previously. And again, of course, Dr. Rothstein.
So you don't think it's irrelevant? You just think that we are an illegitimate outfit that doesn't deserve to get that answer?
I don't think it's the illegitimate. I wouldn't call this an illegitimate outfit, Your Honor. I think this committee is improperly constituted and is an improper body to adjudicate this matter. And because of the both risk of bias.
Counsel, in your brief, you pointed us to Dr. Rothstein's evaluation of Judge Newman. You told us his conclusion that her cognitive function is sufficient to continue her participation on the core. And then you expressly told us that this examination should obviate the need for further testing. This is a hearing about whether it was misconduct for Judge Newman to refuse to undergo the medical testing we requested. Your answer in your brief to us was no, it wasn't misconduct, because she did different testing with a different person and that should suffice. Why then would it be improper for us to seek to know the basis upon which that other testing was rendered, like the material that doctor considered in forming his opinion? You've asked us to accept that testing in lieu of the testing we requested. So why don't we then have an opportunity to inquire about the reliability or the basis of that testing?
Your Honor, respectfully, I would again say that this committee is not a proper body to conduct this evaluation or examination or these proceedings.
But on that answer, what you submitted from Dr. Rothstein counts for nothing because it cannot be examined under Daubert standards.
What we've submitted from Dr. Rothstein is mostly was a point of information that the committee can choose to credit or not credit as it wishes. Our response was to the committee's inquiry as to Judge Newman's cooperation or lack thereof, a reason for it, and the appropriate sanction for doing so if she didn't cooperate.
Didn't you tell us in your July 5th submission that this Dr. Rothstein report should put an end to the concern about Judge Newman's medical history and should therefore obviate the concern of misconduct for not taking the testing that was required?
We've mentioned the report as part of the broader information to the committee that should, in our view, bring this proceeding that should have never started to a close.
This examination should obviate the need for any further testing.
correct. And any further proceedings before this committee or the Judicial Council, because if you looking at Judge Newman's opinions submitted since March, looking at Judge Newman's public statements, looking at this evaluation, there is no basis to conclude that she's in any way disabled.
Well, this is not about whether she's disabled, counsel. This is about whether or not this committee had a reasonable basis to order the medical testing, to ask to interview her, and to request her medical records be provided to someone who would evaluate her. This is not a proceeding about whether she's disabled.
So can we get, and so this goes to the answer I started to you, Judge Toronto, but can we go to that, so to the basis?
Can we just get to that in a second? Just one thing that I wanted to make sure that after your July 5th response, as you know, we issued an order 2 days later saying, please supply us sort of three categories of documents, the unredacted version of Dr. Rothstein, the actual filled out mocha form, and then a category of written materials given to or relied on, I'm not sure what the word, something by Dr. Rothstein. And in your July 12th response, you say, as to that last category, medical records we're not going to give you anymore for the reasons we've already discussed. But the category that we asked you about, or directed you to supply July 7th, is not just medical records, it is all materials. So, for example, that would include all written materials, would include all of the written materials that you have from this proceeding, that declarations and other things that supply the basis for concern about Judge Newman. In your July 12th letter, it doesn't say anything at all about that category. Were those materials supplied to Dr. Rothstein?
Your Honor, you're referring to affidavits? Various affidavits that...
All of the written materials that... that were a part of this proceeding that have been given to you as undergirding the May 16th order for
examination. It is my understanding that materials that are sealed were not provided to Dr. Rothstein.
What about the orders? Were any of the orders which have been made public provided to Dr. Rothstein?
I don't know that he reviewed the orders either.
I'm sorry, I couldn't
understand. I do not know whether he reviewed the orders either.
Were they provided to him?
I
don't know whether he reviewed
them. I was not in the room, Your Honor.
Pardon?
I was not in the room, Your Honor.
Oh, so you don't know if Judge Newman provided him with those orders?
I can't comment on that.
You can't?
I can't comment on that as to whether or not, again, whether they were provided or whether he reviewed them, or et cetera. I do know that he reviewed those materials that he deemed in his professional judgment appropriate before administering the test and reaching his conclusion writing the letter.
Mr. Dolan, can you speak up just a little bit? I'm having trouble hearing you.
He was provided such materials as he, in his professional judgment of decades of experience and being a full professor at George Washington School of Medicine, deemed appropriate to conduct his examination and reach his conclusions. And I was not in the room, and I'm, you know, despite my medical degree, I'm not willing to second guess a full professor of
Let me ask you a couple of questions about his report. We did ask you to come here today prepared to discuss the report and his scoring of the report. Is it true that Judge Newman either had at the time of his evaluation a cast on her arm or her right wrist?
It is.
And he says in two places she was therefore unable to write. Is that correct?
That's correct. She was advised by her orthopedic surgeon not to hold a pen until bones healed.
So not to hold a pen until it heals. So she was not able to do any written part of the MoCA. Correct. Okay. So I'm going to provide you with a MoCA, which is the same MoCA. You can step forward if you don't mind.
I have it.
You have it?
I have it.
Okay, I think you have a copy. So this is the same thing we provided to you as an exhibit, and this is the MoCA.
Yep.
As you can see across the top, there are three portions of the MoCA that require writing. There is what I'll call connect the dots. I'm not a doctor, so I'm going to use layman's language.
Fair enough.
Connect the dots on the left, and there's copy acute. And Dr. Rothstein noted that she couldn't do either of those because she can't write at all, right?
Yes.
Okay, so each of those is worth 1 point, correct?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Then you have to draw a clock where you actually fill in all the numbers and put the hands of the clock on the correct time that's assessed. If she can't write, how could she do that?
Again, Your Honor, I can't comment on how she accomplished that task. I can comment on Dr.
Did she accomplish that task?
Again, I was not in the room.
So do you understand that on the face of Dr. Rothstein's own report, there seems to be an inconsistency? The inconsistency is he said she was unable to write in two places. You confirmed that she's been instructed by an orthopedic surgeon not to even hold a pen.
Yes.
There are three parts of this test that require writing. Dr. Rothstein said she couldn't do two of the three of them because she couldn't write. So how did she do the third?
I suspect that there are ways to do the third by either having the clock identified.
I suspect that
there are ways to do it instead of drawing it, to have a clock identified as well as time identified, etc.
Actually, it turns out there's not on the MOCA website. Do you know that the MOCA website itself explains exactly how to administer the test when you're unable to write? Let me provide you with a copy of it. Here you go. And this is what they say all qualified practitioners should do when a patient is unable to write.
With respect, Judge Moore. Judge Moore.
Yes.
If it were up to me, I would rely on several decades worth of experience of a full professor of neurology at one of the nation's leading medical schools.
Counsel,
as opposed
this
to
full
a
professor of neurology may generally be great, but his own report is internally inconsistent. It says she couldn't write in two places. You've confirmed she couldn't hold a pen. He says because she couldn't write, she couldn't connect the dots, and she couldn't copy a cube. But then when it comes to drawing a clock, which is required by the test to be drawn by the patient, if the patient can't write, according to the MOCA, they can't do any of those three questions. According to the MOCA's own rubric. So I'm wondering whether or not it's possible that he erred in his report because he said she couldn't write at all, but then he seems to have given her full credit for drawing the clock.
Anything is possible.
But that's why the committee has concerns and would like to see the document, is because his report is internally inconsistent on its face.
If you permit me to finish my answer, I was beginning to give. With respect, I would put some trust in a full professor of neurology and in one of the nation's leading medical school over a well-respected judge's interpretation of a MOCA website. And so I understand what you've read, Judge Moore. Nevertheless, I suspect
you haven't seen the MOCA test result, have you?
I have not.
Okay, so you haven't seen it. He says she couldn't write, so she couldn't do the written portion. You don't think it's fair for us to be concerned that possibly he misscored the test since he has given her credit for portions that require writing? On its face, draw a clock.
Again, that Dr. Rothstein knows how to administer this test, knows how to score it, and he was advised before, in fact, when the test was scheduled, it was advised before that Judge Newman was in the cast and asked whether or not
we should
wait.
I don't know what kind of experience you have with respect to expert laden cases, that highly credentialed experts sometimes make mistakes.
Of course, everybody makes mistakes.
And yet we don't
including
have the basis,
this committee.
We don't have the basis for determining that in a document that you submitted to obviate concern here.
Perhaps, but again, I think I would go back to the point that this shouldn't be here in the first place. That's my point. I do want to get back to the numbers. And so because Judge Moore asked me about...
Before you do that, just quick question, because you mentioned it passing and then we moved over it, and you made the statement, I think I'm accurately stating it, that we had no idea who these people were, the people that we identified.
But we don't. I'm sure the committee does.
Excuse me. And did we not, in our order when we identified Dr. give you a way, suggest that you feel free to contact him if you have any questions about anything? And did you take advantage of that? If you had a concern that you don't know either his qualifications or the qualifications of the doctors that were being proposed, did you take advantage of going and asking him?
No, because we would not ever learn as to on what basis was he selected. So no, we don't know. We did not contact Dr.
Did you do any other research at all on your own to ascertain the credentials of the doctors whose names you were given as far back as April 7th?
I have looked at their website profiles.
And did that cause you to have reason to be concerned about their credentials?
It didn't suggest to me that they are either, that they have their diplomas, they have done their residency, they have their licenses. That's all I know.
Did you inquire from Dr. Rothstein if he had any information? He's a renowned specialist that you've identified. Wouldn't he be an appropriate person to inquire into the credentials of these other people?
No.
No one trust him?
No.
He wouldn't be?
We did not ask Dr. Rothstein of his opinion of some other doctor in a different state.
Okay, just to be clear, Judge Prost said you know and trust him. I just want to make it clear for you. For your purposes, for the rest record, yes, that's where I was going. You didn't choose Dr. Rothstein,
I did
correct?
Not. As with every American who seeks medical care, generally in this country, we pick our own providers. And Dr. Newman picked this provider.
Her name is Judge Newman. Actually,
doctor as well. She's a PhD.
To your knowledge, did she have a prior relationship with Dr. Rothstein before this test?
She's known Dr. Rothstein for some time.
Personally or professionally?
Both.
Does that raise any concerns with you about whether or not he's rendering an independent judgment?
It does not. He rendered this judgment as, again, in his capacity as a professor of neurology. He put it on his letterhead.
But you just suggested he has both a personal and a professional relationship with her.
But that is not surprising. I mean, people often have both a personal and professional. I, to this day, have a personal relationship with my pediatrician. That is not surprising.
Are you still seeing the pediatrician? That was a joke. Just trying to.
Sometimes I'll give you an answer. Sometimes.
Okay.
Although not recently, she retired.
I really want to give you a chance, and I know that it says 3 minutes left, but I'll extend the time because on several occasions you sought to try to move to something you wanted to talk about, and we kept you on the topics that we wanted to ask questions about. So I feel like there's something you wanted to move to, and I want to give you the chance.
I'm here to answer the committee's questions, but I guess 2 points, and I'll try to make them quick. One of the main concerns, I suppose, of this committee throughout was Judge Newman's alleged delays in production of the opinions. Including that compared to an average time for an average judge of this court and her, the difference between those average times is 141 days. If you do the math between 199 that takes Judge Newman and whatever, like 58 that it takes an average judge.
53.
So it works out to be 141 days. In a recent paper by Dr. Kitz-Nelson, he calculates that the average difference between a unanimous opinion and an opinion with a dissent is 143 days. So a unanimous opinion issues 143 days earlier, on average, than an opinion with a dissent or concurrent opinion. That seems to track pretty well with Judge Newman's delays, given the fact that she dissents in more than half of the cases. So her delays are not extraordinary. But even more important, and that's leaving aside the Dr. Kitz-Nelson paper. This is based on the court's own data. Judge Newman's delays between 2020 and 2021, where there was apparently no suspicion of any disability, and 2021 to 2023 have been reduced.
Counsel, her sittings were reduced. She sat 65 cases in the second period where the average judge sat 128. She sat closer to the normal level with everyone else in the earlier period. So the explanation, with all due respect, to why she might have been able to get the same number of opinions out quicker is because she sat on like half the cases that she had the previous time period.
Of course, Judge Moore, that was not her choice. It's hard for me to understand how.
You said it was not her choice. None of the time period that we measured, just to be clear, was any period of time in which she was prevented by sitting from any of us.
My understanding, based from my time in clerking on the court and my conversation with Judge Newman, is that judges don't just pick their cases. That the assignment, and so also reviewing the clerical procedure, the assignment is done by the chief judge together working with the office of the clerk. Maybe I'm wrong.
Completely false. The chief judge has no input whatsoever.
Assignment to the panels. Assignment to the panels.
That's completely false. The chief judge has no input whatsoever. Every judge does their own selection.
Fair enough. Then I apologize for that misunderstanding. And then the second point.
And just to be clear, the assignment of cases is random in the event that somehow this transcript didn't make that clear. No judge chooses their individual cases.
Of course.
The assignment of cases to each panel is random, but the judge's choice to sit or not sit has always been the judge's choice during these time periods that were measured.
Well, fair enough. And then I apologize for my misunderstanding and my misreading of the clerical procedures. I guess I know I'm out of time, but I did want to touch on the potential sanctions. As we indicated in sanctions.
Thank you.
As we indicated in our letter, not only is the requirement that Judge Newman sit for medical exam is unprecedented, it has never been done. I know the committee studied the Adams case. Judge Adams never actually did sit for the medical exam and had no sanctions imposed for it.
I'm sorry, but there was an order upheld by the Judicial Conference Committee that required him to do so. Then on remand, he reformed his behavior, and the Judicial Council, after a certain waiting period, decided that the proceeding didn't need to go forward. So there has been an affirmed order compelling, in that case, a psychiatric examination.
Which
right?
he declined to do and received no sanction for it. Even on remand, he declined to sit because on remand, the judicial investigating, the special committee, requested that he sit for the exam again. He declined to do it again. The special investigating committee recommended a 6-month suspension, which the judicial council of the Sixth Circuit refused to endorse. Mm-hmm. So Judge Newman would be the first judge in the history of this country to sit to a forced medical examination. But on the sanctions, so let's get back to the 6 months. One, of course, our position is no sanctions are warranted because we do not believe that Judge Newman either refused to cooperate or that if she did, that such refusal was without good cause. But to the extent that this committee or the Judicial Council believes that a sanction is warranted, we would note that Judge Newman has already been suspended from sitting on cases for 6 months. My understanding is the September calendar is out, so it will be April, May, June, July, August, September, 6 months. If it takes some time for this committee to issue its report, then of course we have 21 days to review it and file our appeal to Judicial Council, et cetera, it gets us probably into October calendar. So at least on that point, the sanction imposed, even taken into as Judge Adams' precedent, they suggested 6 months, certainly no more is appropriate here. I'm happy to answer any other questions, but I do have one question for the committee, if it will permit me. And that goes back to Judge Morris. At the very beginning, you said these matters confidential. I said I understand, but I do want to go back to that. We would like some guidance from the committee as to what can. Obviously, we understand that no witness names or witness statements can be discussed. I understand that, and we've tried to keep that, to keep that without order. So, but we would like to some guidance as to which part of beyond the fact that this hearing has occurred can't be discussed.
At this point, nothing. You can submit a 23B7 request to have the transcript made public. You and I can work collectively on making certain it's redacted. For example, quite a bit of Judge Newman's personal medical information was discussed, and I'm not 100% positive what about that you would like to have redacted or not have redacted. I don't remember if witness names were discussed at all, but in any event, I think that
probably we should wait and see the transcript and then collectively work together to ensure that what is released is something that we're both comfortable with. Does that sound reasonable?
That sounds reasonable. I'm certainly happy to put in a formal 23B7 request. I think I've made it in my letter, in my last letter to the committee, as well as here orally.
If you want me to, I'll just assume this oral request is a 23B7
right.
request to have the transcript made public.
After,
if it's okay with you,
right,
I would
correct.
Like to review the transcript first to ensure
of course.
That nothing about it contains information that should be otherwise
of,
kept completely
of course, and vice versa. And then with that, I guess I'll close with just, again, reiterating our request that the letter brief, which, of course, the committee can edit for. I don't think there's any witness names there, but letter brief as well as everything, all the submissions up until now, be released pursuant to 23B7, and that we made that request in the submissions themselves. It would be usually the first footnote of the submission.
Anything further? Okay, thank you, counsel. This case is taken under submission.
Thank you, Mila.